I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
So, let us go back. 1994.
Okay.
I was going to be ordained a deacon.
Okay. We're and also, just okay, real quick, we're in episode 3 at this point.
Okay, perfect. Well, I don't know what we are.
So,
okay, I'm just having fun.
Good. We're back
in
I'm
just having fun because we're good. I just text Father Chad before I got here. I said, my 3:30 canceled, so I just feel so open relief.
I just canceled my 4:45. Oh my.
I don't even know what time it is.
I was going to go, it's 3:45.
Oh, you're kidding. This is beautiful. This is beautiful. So, in the summer of 93... Now this is, you want to talk about coming full circle?
Uh-huh.
In summer of 93, I go out and teach Totus Tuus. It's the summer before my diaconate. I teach Totus Tuus that summer, and towards the end of the week, the end of the summer, I'm teaching in this parish called St. Joe Ost. I meet a family there. Not going to mention their names, but it was just like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. Farmstead, German family, beautiful wife, beautiful kids, lots of kids. And I'm just like, Georges, what are you doing? Now, remember what I began with. I sold what I had. I kept the money. And I went to seminary and gave the Lord 1 year at a time. I'm like, I have not burned any bridges. I know the business. I know the industry. I know the business. I know I could still get back in. I'm like, what am I doing, Georges? Wife, farm, picket fence, kids. I'm like, wow. So I go back to seminary in the fall of 93, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Georges, what are you doing here? You know, and so I'm struggling with my spiritual director a little bit or whatever. He's kind of blowing me off and like, Bernie, shape up, you know, you'll whatever. And then I went on a 30-day retreat in the beginning of March 94.
Was this by your choice or was this standard for the seminary at the time?
We were given a choice.
Okay.
And most of the Wichita guys did at that time. Yeah. We all had this beautiful opportunity, and Wichita guys took it up. I think, I don't know, one of them did it, and we just kind of spread. So if you're a Wichita guy, a lot of guys took that opportunity. So we could do it either for a diaconate canonical or a priest canonical. Mm-hmm. And so I went on for my diaconate, 30-day silent retreat. I was quiet for 2 weeks. I just want you to know that.
You realize 30 days is longer than 2 weeks, right?
No, I was quiet for 2 weeks. So finally, I explode. But anyway, so in that amazing, and I recommend it to every seminarian and every priest to go on a 30-day silent retreat. It's just phenomenal. Anyway, my whole life was just amazing, put into one nutshell, if you will. But I got to the point, and if I can bore you for a second, but March 17th, I was in my third week of the exercises, and I decided, it was a Thursday, I believe, or Wednesday, and I decided, all right, I'm not going to seminary. I'm not going to be ordained a priest or a deacon. I'm not going to be ordained. I think a day passed, and I remember writing a letter to my mom and dad and just jotting down that my heart is set on finding a woman, getting a farm, kids, money. And I wrote that letter and said, you know, I'm not going on, because I knew it would be a shock to him. So I presented this. I brought this letter to my spiritual direction the next day. And I told my spiritual director, who was a Franciscan, God rest his soul, he's a beautiful man. And I told him, and he looked at me, and I gave him the whole spiel. And I had some manly tears then too, you know, because, you know, you've been in this for almost 7 years. And it's like, okay. And he stopped me. He says, Bernie, he goes, why do you think it's your choice? Maybe it's God's holy will that you go on.
Wow.
And he says, maybe you don't want to, fine, but that's not God's will. And I said, what do you mean, Father? He says, maybe you need to ask the church what she wants of you. Father, how am I supposed to do that? And he says, when you get out of this retreat, you ask the church. Well, how am I supposed to do? Ask all those professors, all those who were in part of your formation over the last 3.5 years. You ask them, see what they think. And I said, oh, okay. But let me just tell you, I walked out of that spiritual direction with this load lifted that, you know what? I said to myself, Georges, it's not your decision. would you submit to the will of the church? And I said, yes. And one of my reasons is because I know I'm kind of a little bit odd. I know I'm a little bit screwed up. And I didn't want to hurt the church with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I left there with this weight lifted. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do that. I'm just going to ask the church to see what she wants to do. So I finished. So anyway, that it was so amazing. I left that spiritual direction, at least maybe it's the next morning. I woke up and I'm in Ohio. And Ohio, the sun never shines, but maybe, you know, I'm a couple days a year. But anyway, that morning it was shining. There were bugs flying around. It was like, and you know, when you're 30 days inside, you start noticing nature, you know, I mean, it's anyway. So I was like, whoa, this is a whole new lease on life. This is awesome. So I go another week, finish the exercises. And I just started going to professor after professor. And most of them were priests. And I said, what do you think? Do you think, you know? And so I had a, you know, 5, 10 minute, 15 minute little discussion with them. Some of the struggles that I had about this, that, or the other, and whether or not I should be a priest. And they all kind of said, yeah. George's, I think, yeah. So towards the end of that, I went to my formator, maybe after 5, 6 days. And he says, he sat me down. He says, Bernie, he says, we voted on the deacons today. You're the only one that was unanimous. Could there be any more clear? You know? So a couple weeks later was Tuesday of Holy Week, and I was ordained a deacon. And I've never looked back since. Never looked back. It was that point when the church said yes, I said, okay, I'm going to do this. But anyway.
That you
it
know,
was, it was huge. It was, you know.
That is really good for me to hear in... I think I was a later in my own discernment of deciding as well as really shortly before I was ordained a deacon that I'm like, this is what I want to do. And it was similar to experience. Once I crossed that threshold, I never looked back. And I don't know if that's normative or not. That's kind of my experience. But it's certainly, it feels like it right now in seminary formation in the world of the church, there's this push that this decision has to be made much sooner and much more comfortable with it. And I wasn't there in my time in theology until shortly before I was ordained a deacon.
Let me, after I was ordained, and I've shared this story, you know, with a few brother priests, and I ran into this priest, Father John Rickemeyer. Now, he is an old...
We could have a whole episode of Father Rickemeyer stories.
Oh, my goodness. But he said, you know, he looked at me and he goes, I didn't want to be a priest. But he had a conviction that the church... And God's holy will was yes. And as he explained that, it's like, whoa, I'm not the only dude, you know, that said, hey, you know.
I think that element's a little bit lost right now. You know, you can obviously go too far to that, to a problematic sense, I think. And, you know, the church is always in ebb and flow of it's strong here. Maybe it's forgot. But I think there is a piece in the discernment conversation for that that's less present today.
Maybe there's a little overemphasis. I'm just psychoanalyzing myself. But there was like an overemphasis on my own autonomy, my freedom and my autonomy. And it's like, okay, you know, maybe no. You know, it's, and of course, the agony in the garden. It's always not my will, your holy will be done. Yeah, Jesus submitted his autonomy.
And I love that like version of discerning with the church. That's something we talk about in my mind usually goes to. Sometimes the church does discern and that's a no. And you're not, this individual does not have the capacity to live the priestly life. But the flip side of that is true too. Sometimes we're in that space in seminary in our discernment and we're like you said, there's something in me. It's like, I don't want to hurt the church with my, I know myself too well and I'm going to hurt God and his people. And so I'm just, I might use another excuse and say like, ah, whatever. I don't really, I'm not going to go through with it. But that can be a positive thing that the church sees something in me to call me forth when I would have hesitated and said no.
But going back to the journey of being ordained in 95, May 27th, there was no...
That's my ordination date.
Is that right? Cool.
I think that's mine too.
Chad never remembers.
Ooh, wow.
27th or 29th. It's in that area.
But let me just say, it was a no-brainer. I mean, my decision was already made when I was a deacon. So whatever I had to do to make that happen, priesthood, first mass, whatever, okay, I'll do that.
A lot of people... You know, they look at the first mass and the priestly ordination as the big celebratory thing. And it is, and it's beautiful and it's wonderful. But I think almost all of us, the decision's made at deacon time. And that's the emotional, for us personally, decision. And then after that, it's just, okay, now we're just doing paperwork.
What was funny, too, is that, you know, there's five in my class. And I think we were experimented on a little bit, you know.
Who else? Who's in your class?
Can I say names?
Yeah. No.
Okay. Father Danny Vaca and Father Daryl Beffert.
Okay.
They were, after college, they were sent to Colorado experiment.
Okay.
And then Father Sam Pinkerton, Father Hoisington, who are very similar personalities, they were both sent to Mundelein experiment.
Yeah.
And then me by myself, I was sent to Josephinum.
Okay.
So it's kind of, yeah.
Spread out.
Just, yeah, we were all spread out. And to tell you the truth, you know, Father Beffert and Father Vaca, we went to school together at Winona. Mm-hmm. So I knew those three, or two, or the three of us, we knew each other. We did not know Father Sam or Father Hoisington because we didn't go to college with him. We didn't go to grad school.
Throughout your whole seminary experience. That's zero. So wild. And I'll hear that from other dioceses even still to this day. But there's no guys in seminary that we don't know. You might not click. Yeah. You might not be like best friends with a guy, but you would never say about a Wichita guy currently that I don't know another Wichita guy.
But it's because of that experience of not knowing Father Sam and Father Hoyt, who to me are just awesome guys. Because of that, and not knowing, quote, classmates or ordination brothers, that's where I fought so hard to get a seminary in our diocese. I wanted all the men to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to the four winds, you know, but get to know each other.
And you really are seeing that with our guy. I really do. As kind of an outsider, even though I'm on the vocations team, but kind of an outsider to it. I absolutely think that has been the case with our younger guys right now.
Oh, absolutely. I remember, because that would happen occasionally. There'd be guys, even in my class, I didn't go to school with, and there was a little bit of a rivalry between the theologates.
Oh, sure.
And that's still there, but it's more of a brotherly because they know each other.
Yeah, it's different.
See, brother, here's another thing. Yeah. When we were away for the summer, Gerber did not bring us together.
Oh, yeah.
Not on Fridays. You know, you had the Friday.
We do it every week. Yeah.
Sure. We had none of that. We would see each other maybe at the ordinations, bid farewell. We went on our way, and we'd see each other back in August for the retreat. I didn't know the guys.
Mm-hmm.
That if I didn't go to school with them, I didn't really know them.
Yeah.
So that's what I love, too, about, and I don't know who started the Friday formation. I think it was maybe Jekylls or Olmsted, but that was huge. That was huge, I think, for our brotherhood.
Even with the change that's coming down the pike in seminary formation, with it's called the PPF, our summer program actually puts us ahead of where a lot of dioceses are needing to move to be in line with the documents from Rome. But because we already had those in place with a summer program, it's less of a pivot for us.
One thing I was going to ask you about, just with your experience with Totus Tuus and everything, Drew mentioned the talk that he has with the Sims that teach Totus Tuus every year. Of just that's basically just you're going back to seminary.
Yeah.
After this summer, because you're probably going to meet a girl, and she's going to be awesome, and she's great, but you're going back. So, we hear that of like some people even, in a sense, attacking Totus Tuus, or some other dioceses, like they might may not let their sims teach. And
I think
what's just your take on that?
Well, I called Father Chad after the bishop called me. A bishop called me from another diocese, and he says, "Bernie." He says, "What is going on with these sending these seminarians out with these beautiful Catholic women? What are you thinking? Are you sure this is prudent?" You know? And the only thing that I could really say to him, I said, "You know what?" I said, "Bishop," I said, "this is not just to be a test, but this is the real life experience of a young man dealing with beautiful, faithful people of the opposite sex," you know. Mm-hmm. I said, so he's got to, you know, I don't want to call it just a test, but I said, they can learn so much. And I told him a couple stories about the girl I was dating, and we were at a Blessed Sacrament chapel. Another girl, you know, that we would spend time and do a holy hour together. We'd do rosary walks together. And I said, these beautiful holy women taught me how to be a better man. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, did they challenge my heart? Oh, hell yeah. But, you know, that's part of being a man, being a priest. Yes, our heart's going to be challenged.
Right. So you want to find that middle ground, because you don't want to put guys like the guys were saying to you, like, be careful, you're going to lose a vocation. So there's like appropriate boundaries and things like that. Also, at the same time, this is going to happen at some point that you're going to meet it's going to happen at you some know, point. You're going to meet a girl. You're going to have to see how you handle it. And so the sheltering and the hiding, guys, is also not the right answer.
Yeah,
right.
No, well, okay, so
I had a seminarian teaching Totus Tuus, and he had told me this after, like, yeah, I kind of was wondering what would happen if I were testing that. So I asked God to give me that opportunity. Oh, like, that was not a smart prayer, because the Lord heard it and there was some heartache along the way. Again, yeah. The Lord provided and took care of it. But I'm like, that's a rough prayer, buddy.
That's like making a deal with Mary. Don't make a deal yeah. with Mary.
But look what it gave us.
Yeah. But what's kind of cool too, though, is that, yes, I don't think I'm exceptional. I think most all of us priests, I hope, would have had some sort of struggle in the decision and in the life. Mm-hmm. Pray God, it never hit me in priesthood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Praise God. But it was all during seminary.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah. Before seminary, during seminary. You know, I mean, that was the, you know, and I have to tell you, probably my spiritual director, that would be my anchor. So seminarians, listen to this. You got to have that be totally honest with your spiritual director. Mm-hmm. Do not be afraid to share your heart. And when you try to start BSing your spiritual director, that's when you're going to,
yeah,
the only person you're going to fool is yourself. But be totally honest with the spiritual director. And they're the ones who are able to walk you through that pain, loneliness, suffering, whatever, you know, and they're able to move you through that. And that's what I learned from my spiritual director. And, you know, I go back to grad school again, is that I remember I was newly ordained a deacon. I think it was in the fall, maybe after my diaconate. And I'm going to my confession to my spiritual director. And he just leaned back and started laughing. Now, he was a Franciscan, a big old jolly fellow. But anyway, started laughing. I said, Father, what's so funny? And he says, Bernie, you're going to be a great confessor. I said, how's that? He goes, because you're such a sinner. But he shared with me that our life experiences shape the man we are.
Yep.
You know, we all have our hardware. Like if numbers are my hardware, right? Yeah. Right.
Your DOS, if you will.
You know, so that might be my hardware. But the software that's written on us is our life experience. It's our family. It's our, you know, it's what we experienced in life. It's the challenges and the failures and the wards and the competitions that we've been successful at or failed at. All of those things shape us, form us to the man we are today. So God works beyond just the hardware. He shapes and molds us. And again, this is part of our spiritual direction. And this is part of our prayer life, is that God uses you no matter what it is, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, I have always loved challenges. I've always loved, especially, and I've mentioned this before, when someone says it can't be done, I was like, oh, honey, let's see what we can do. Another short story. I was approached in the year 2000, by this guy who had a fraternity at Manhattan in K-State. And they had just expended a lot of energy and finances remodeling the place. And I mean, it was tip top, not top shape. And back in this 2000, $250,000, that's big money. So that'd be like double today, 20 some years later. And he says, Bernie, you have a lot of connection with a lot of, you know, high school guys and stuff like that. Can you promote us? And I said, you betcha. But I said, I can't promote anything that I don't know. So I spent, over the next, 4 or 5 months, spent, you know, a weekend, a couple of days there, hanging out with the guys and stuff like that. And I said, ooh, this could use a lot of work, but I mean, this is real doable. So I recruited 13 guys and asked them to go to this place or whatever, live in this environment. And it was a Catholic fraternity. And I'm not going to mention the name of whatever, but you know, it wasn't as Catholic as they wanted. And after 1 year, they were ready to throw their hands in the air. And they said, no, we're not going to go through this. I said, give it one more year. Give it one more year. We can make some changes. So that's when I started going up once a month to see the boys. And again, there was 12, 13, maybe at the time, maybe 11 at the time. And they were struggling. And there was no one that I could really talk to as a priest to be able to say, hey, maybe some corrections need to be here and this, that, you know, nobody to talk to, nobody to listen to me. So we got together, and I want to say it was probably in June, over a weekend, had about 4, 5, 6 guys from the house or from that fraternity. And they sat mom and dad were gone. They were on vacation on the farm. So I had the whole farmhouse to myself, had brought in 5, 6 guys and housed them all, called my niece up, who was like 16, 17 years old, who was an amazing cook, still an amazing cook, you know, here 30 some years later. I said, okay, here's the deal. I need 3 squares plus snacks plus midnight chow for 6 guys, 8 guys. She goes, no problem. do it. So I just paid her the money. She did all the shopping. We had food. Anyway, so we went and hammered out bylaws. We hammered out our vision, hammered out what kind of household would we want to be. We did not want a fraternity. We wanted a household. We wanted to stay away from that name fraternity. So we formed a household of guys, and we called it Cairo, right there at the George's Farm. And that was in the summer of 2002. And we started the spring, fall of 2002, and we used renting apartments. And it's how we started out, maybe with two or three apartments or something like that. Now, I helped finance some of the beginnings there. And, of course, I did all the books for it. But eventually, it kind of grew on its own. And you know, I was expending, I don't know, $8,000-$10,000 or maybe a year, or whatever, to kind of get the household put together. I mean, when you start, and you got those of you who have gotten your own apartment, you know, it doesn't come with silverware. Now I got a group of 12, 15 guys. No silverware, no glasses, no plates, no really no refrigerators. Now, I think we had some that were pretty lousy. But anyway, and I have to say, God gave me the gift of the financial benefit to be able to pull something like that together. So, you know, it's kind of fun to see this thing grow and to see the men grow together. And what's even more amazing is that I see some of these guys. That's 21 years ago. And to see some of these founding members, these guys are still best friends today. Mm. At the beginning, it was a lot of Wichita guys. And then there was times where it was mostly just Kansan guys. And then maybe it shifts back and forth, you know, what percentage of Kansas. But we represent the whole state, at least the whole state of Kansas. And so the Cairo household is just amazing. It's just inspiration to me. I still go once a month.
Yep.
And over the last several years, the leadership at Isidore's was kind of fit. No.
Hell, hey.
No. What's amazing is that the leadership at Isidore's has strengthened the house so amazingly. There were times over the last 20 some years that it was not strong leadership there. And so the house would kind of grow weak. But when Isidore's got strong, our house got strong. And it's just the leadership at Isidore's right now is so amazing, especially with my brother across the room here. It was amazing. Our house, really, you could tell the faith became center.
Dom, you're Aka Seminarian for Wichita. Yep. He's a Cairo boy.
Yep. Yep.
And Father David Voss was a Cairo boy and a lot of them over the years.
Yep. I'm pretty sure I just saw news stories that they're condemning the original apartments that Cairo started in, I think 20 years later.
Oh, really?
I think they've been condemned. I think they should have been condemned 20 years ago, as I recall these apartments.
Where were they?
King's
Royal Towers.
Royal Towers.
Royal Towers.
I don't even know where that is.
Right on it's North Manhattan, north of Claflin.
Yeah, I think it's terrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right between it's the bad. ATOs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, I forget that sorority.
Well, I'm going to attempt to do the impossible.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
And let's wrap this up because we're in episode 3 right now. So thank you so much for being here, Bernie.
You're the man, Bernie.
It's been great. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. And the final word today goes to Father Bernie.
Well, thank you. And again, just to make a short story long. When I was a freshman in seminary, my spiritual director.
You're only doing this because I said it couldn't be done.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. He gave me a book called Soul of the Apostolate by Jean-Baptiste de Chautard. And that sounds like Luc Picard. But anyway, so Chautard wrote this book to build up and inspire the priest, I'm going to say in the 30s, 40s, 50s. But that became this book, Soul of the Apostle, became my bedrock. And one of the reasons probably, again, hindsight 2020, is the challenge that he gives us. And this is page 39 of the Soul of the Apostolate. He says this: if the priest is a saint, the people will be fervent. If the priest is fervent, the people will be pious. If the priest is pious, the people will at least be decent. But if the priest is only decent, the people will be godless. The spiritual generation is always one degree less intense in the life of those who beget it in Jesus Christ. So I think maybe that might find my unworthiness or whatever. Because there's times I don't know if I'm decent. But I've always, over the years, almost 28 years now as a priest, I can apply this to fathers of the family. If the father of the family is a saint, if the father of the family is fervent, or so on. and the wife and the mother of the family, if she's a saint, if she's holy. So I apply it to all of us are challenged, I believe, to always strive for that sanctity. And I think that's the most beautiful thing that we have as a witness with John Paul II, especially, is that all of us are called to holiness. All of us are called to the sanctity, and it is possible.
Thank you.
Brothers, thank you. God bless.
See you next week.